By listening to the Conscious Fertility Podcast, you agree to not use this podcast as medical advice to treat any medical condition in either yourself or others. Consult your own physician or healthcare provider for any medical issues that you may be having. This entire disclaimer also applies to any guests or contributors to the podcast. Welcome to Conscious Fertility, the show that listens to all of your fertility questions so that you can move from fear and suffering to peace of mind and joy. My name is Lauren Brown. I'm a doctor of traditional Chinese medicine and a clinical hypnotherapist. I'm on a mission to explore all the paths to peak fertility and joyful living. It's time to learn how to be and receive so that you can create life on purpose. Welcome to the Conscious Fertility Podcast. Today, our guest is Steve Taylor, who is a senior lecturer in psychology at Leeds Beckett University and the author of several best-selling books. And I'm telling you, several. He's written many books on psychology and spirituality. Dr. Taylor has a master's degree with distinction in consciousness and transpersonal psychology and a PhD in psychology from Liverpool John Moores University. He's also the past chair of the transpersonal psychology section of the British Psychological Society. His latest book, and depending on when you're listening to this, this may not be his latest book, but at the time of our recording, his new book is The Adventure, Step-by-Step Practices for Cultivating Spiritual Awakening. He has other books as well, which include Disconnected, The Roots of Human Cruelty and How Connection Can Heal the World. I think that's an important one that maybe we all want to read, especially our world leaders. Extraordinary Awakenings, The Clear Light, Out of the Darkness, Back to Sanity, The Calm Center, The Leap, and Spiritual Science. And as I mentioned, he has many more books as well that you can check out on his website in our show notes. His books have been published in 20 languages, and his articles and essays have been published in over 100 academic journals, magazines, and newspapers. He also writes blogs, articles for Scientific American, The Conversation, and also for Psychology Today. And many of you have heard me reference Eckhart Tolle, the author of The Power of the Now and New Earth. And he's described Steve's work as an important contribution to the shift in consciousness which is happening on our planet at present. And Steve lives in Manchester, England, with his wife and three children. Steve, welcome to the Conscious Fertility Podcast.
Hi there, Lauren. Great to be with you.
You know, it's kind of the synchronicity. I got to tell you how this kind of came together for our audience and for you as well. I know you know part of it, but one of my colleagues sent me a link to your book on the Extraordinary Awakenings. I said, have you heard of this guy, Steve Taylor? And I was like, the name's familiar. And then I recalled that I moderated your talk for the Society for Science Exploration online back in 2020 when we hosted that on our online platform. And then I reached out to you again, and here we are. So I liked how that has all come full circle for us.
Wonderful.
So our audience is those trying to grow their families and also those that just want to have more happiness, more peace in their life, want to manifest. And this is one of those episodes that this is for everybody. This is not just for those who want to grow their family. But where this ties into fertility, you have this term you call TTT. I think it's transformation through turmoil and how this can lead to spiritual awakening. And so many people on the fertility journey describe it as incredibly stressful, fertility stress and fertility trauma. It's been linked or compared to getting a terminal diagnosis like cancer, so that severe. And I know you've written lots on this, but I also see people come to our practice that have gone through a bad divorce, have gotten a serious diagnosis. And I kind of wanted to hear a little bit more, because you've done so much research and writing on this, on how our suffering and turmoil, there's an opportunity for spiritual awakening and consciousness. And could you share a little bit about this and why we care about this spiritual awakening? Like, why would somebody be interested in this topic in general?
Well, there's a concept in psychology that many of your listeners have probably heard of called post-traumatic growth, which explains that any form of trauma can, in the long run, have positive after effects. And trauma in the long run, even if it takes a few years to manifest itself, it can lead to a new sense of appreciation, a new philosophical or spiritual outlook on life, a wider sense of perspective, and deeper, more authentic relationships. So that's a very well-known concept in psychology. And transformation through turmoil is similar, but it's more dramatic. I found in my research that often when people go through severe trauma over a long period of time, severe stress or depression, or sometimes it's a diagnosis of cancer, It could be a bereavement or a long period of addiction, recovery from a long period of addiction. They can undergo a shift where they feel as though they've taken on a new identity. And I think what happens in those situations is that the normal ego that most of us define as us, when it goes through a period of stress and turmoil, the ego can break down, it can dissolve away. And either it sort of collapses due to the stress, or there's a long process of loss or depression, which slowly breaks it down. And it comes to a culmination where the ego just collapses like a building. You know, when you take away a certain number of bricks from a building, it just collapses. So that's what can happen. The ego collapses under the stress. But sometimes in a minority of people, it's almost as if there is a latent higher self which takes over in those situations. It kind of emerges from the ashes of the old ego. It's almost as if it was always there, just waiting for the opportunity to emerge. So then it emerges and it becomes their new sense of identity. So people feel, you know, that with this new sense of self, they feel completely different, almost as if they're different people living in the same body. So that's one way of looking at it. And also you can look and think about it in terms of systems theory, where when a system collapses due to strain or stress, in some circumstances, it can fuse together at a higher level of order. So it waits for a while and slowly begins to fuse together. And it restructures itself. And it's always at a higher level of order with a new sense of harmony. So that's what I think happens.
Well, there's a little bit to unpack there because you said a few things that I'm really curious what your research has shown and your own personal experience. You talked about this higher self. And so many of the expert guests we have talk about this big C consciousness or higher self. So do you subscribe to the idea there's more to this world than the materialistic world that we see with our five senses then?
Certainly, yeah. I think what most human beings perceive as reality is a very limited form of reality. And it's a kind of illusion that we take this for reality itself. I mean, and it's kind of arrogant as well, because every animal has a certain view of reality, and every animal probably assumes that it's aware of all reality. But we know, you know, because we're more advanced than some animals, we know that we have a more refined and more intense consciousness than some other animals. But that doesn't mean that our consciousness is whole and absolute and objective. And when we have these experiences, when we have spiritual experiences, we realize that. We become aware of a wider, a more intense reality. We realize that our normal vision is a kind of shadow, kind of, it's like, you know, it's like Plato's myth of the cave. We're staring at the shadows on the wall of the cave, but we assume it's real. And then we turn around and see reality. We see the brightness of reality, and it dazzles us and overwhelms us. It takes us a while to get used to it. But yeah, that's one takeaway from these experiences, this realization that normal reality is limited.
And so when somebody has these situations in their lives, they can be viewed as opportunities. There's a chance for growth here, because we're familiar with the term post-traumatic stress disorder, where we're still limited and we're struggling from the trauma that we've experienced or the perceived trauma. And then you shared there's an opportunity here for post-traumatic growth. And
yeah,
it sounds like that life sometimes can bring us to our knees. And you said the ego kind of, it's like a dissolution of ego. So we're mm-hmm. brought to our knees where we have to fully surrender. And when we yeah. fully surrender, this allows his higher self to come through us. And there's a new identity or a new personality. And from this, from your research and the books you've written then on this topic, have people's lives changed? And have there been
massively.
Healings? Do you have documentation of healings as well, where there's a new
yes.
identity, so there's a new, the body has a healing?
Yes, yes. I mean, one thing I found is that along similar lines to what you were describing there, that acceptance is a really important part of the process of transformation. You know, I mean, everybody goes through suffering. It's part of human life. You know, we all go through trauma. Severe trauma many times in our lives is just part of reality. But obviously, not everybody undergoes transformation. So one of the important factors in harnessing the transformational potential of these events is an attitude of acceptance. Well, on the one hand, it's acknowledgement, you know, facing up to the reality of our predicament. And then it's accepting, letting go, surrendering to the reality of our predicament. So a diagnosis of cancer is a good example. Some people do undergo, you know, massive transformations, spiritual awakenings after a diagnosis of cancer. Many people don't. But, you know, so part of that process is to acknowledge the reality of a diagnosis of cancer, acknowledge the reality that you're facing death and that you're potentially experiencing a tremendous loss. And then you accept it, you surrender or let go. You know, you don't resist that reality. You kind of open yourself to it and embrace it. And that's when transformation is most likely to occur.
You just said something that I love, but I want to continue on and then I'll share what you made me think of.
Oh, no, I was just going to say that I've investigated many cases of transformation in addicts as well, alcoholics or drug addicts. And, you know, it's usually when they're so broken down that they just give up. They kind of accept their predicament, thinking there's nothing I can do. This is hopeless. Or they hand over their problem, which is part of the AA process, handing over your problem to a higher power. And that's, you know, that moment of surrender, of letting go, is often the moment when transformation occurs.
So I have to share this with you. I have this approach. My listeners, if they've been listening to this, they've heard this before. People come to my practice for my conscious work. And the method I have to support this transformation, this awakening, I call NAC, notice, accept, choose again. And you just described it. So this is why I get excited.
No, go ahead.
Everybody I interview, the books I read, one day it was just a aha moment. Like, some have 10 steps, some have 2 steps, some have these elaborate ways of doing it. And one day just distilled down in my mind that it seems like everybody's doing notice, accept, choose again. Notice. Everything that happens is neutral, and we give it meaning. And the meaning we give it is through the lens of our subconscious. So when you believe in the story, you make it real. You become the effect of it. So first step is you have to notice, like you said, you're in the you got to realize your situation. So, because if you can't notice it, then you're at the effect of it. You're unconscious. Second stage is accept. And I have multiple tools that can fit into this. But the accept is about surrendering, accepting what is. It doesn't mean you're resigned to it. It doesn't mean you like it. But in this moment, this is how you feel. This is what your experience is. So accept it. Because when you don't accept it, you create resistance. I heard you use the word resistance. And I always say resistance. In Chinese medicine, we call that qi stagnation. Resistance does not feel good. But when you fully accept and lean into these uncomfortable feelings, I suspect or believe that it puts you into presence. It acts as a portal to presence.
Yeah, definitely.
I imagine the brainwaves go down into alpha because you've surrendered. You go from sympathetic alarm to parasympathetic, and then you connect to your higher self. And when resistance drops, you now have flow and receptivity, and that feels good.
Yeah.
And flow and receptivity, inspired thought can flow into you where you can take inspired action. And then C stands for choose again. How do you want to be in this world? Because now you're conscious, you can choose more so how you want to be in this world. And hopefully that's coming through, or it is coming through your higher self. So just thank you for saying that, because I was it is again, NAC.
Yeah, it's very similar. Yeah, the way I would describe it is that when you live in a state of resistance, you create a duality between yourself and reality.
Yeah.
You create a conflict between yourself and reality. And a conflict always creates tension. You know, it creates a blockage. So when you enter into a mode of acceptance, that duality fades away, the blockage disappears. So suddenly there's an opening and you become one with reality. So there's a sense of harmony.
And when you become one with that reality, again, this is going more, not so much in the materialistic level. You're really saying one with reality, as in you're no longer separate and you're connecting to your higher self, or some would say super consciousness. You're connecting to universal chi. I don't know what we should call it, consciousness. Is that what you're describing here? I wanted to check in with that.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, there's, you know, once you, I think one of the kind of core principles of my approach is that most human beings have a sense of separation. We feel that we are separate entities living inside our mental space with the rest of the world out there on the other side. But in spiritual experiences, we realize that this sense of separation is illusory. And that comes from, you know, that ties into acceptance as well. Resistance to reality intensifies or strengthens our sense of separation. So when we enter into acceptance, separation, that sense of separateness fades away. It brings a sense of connection to reality. And once you're connected to reality, you know, on the one hand, you feel a sense of ease, because you're no longer a separate, incomplete being. But you also have a greater access to you know, the energies and the forces of the world. Your life begins to flow much more easily. It's almost as if you're being supported by the rest of the world because you're one with it.
And I'm curious more about when you're one with it, or you're awakened, you're conscious, if there's any what we would call spontaneous healings or change. And if you have any stories to share, because just some of the stuff I've come across from the literature, they talk, for example, of those with like multiple personalities, and depending on which personality is present, one would need reading glasses and one would not. one blood test would show up that they're diabetic and one would not, which I thought was amazing. The hardware is the same. There's the same physical body, but the software they're running changes how their eyes work or their blood chemistry. And you had said earlier when we started chatting about in this awakening, post-traumatic growth, there's a new identity with this change in ego. And so through your research and the books you've read, do you have any stories or is there data on that as well that you've come across?
Certainly, yeah. I mean, on the one hand, there's a profound psychological healing which takes place. So even if people have been through really intense trauma earlier in their life, the trauma seems to dissipate and the effects of the trauma seem to disappear. One example is a woman I interviewed who I speak about in Extraordinary Awakenings, a Scottish woman called Eve, who was a severe alcoholic for 29 years. And she, you know, during that period, she went through all kinds of terrible incidents, you know, violence. She was abused. She was raped. She went through lots of, you know, terrible traumatic episodes. And obviously those episodes had a traumatic effect on her. But after 29 years as an alcoholic, she was completely broken down and she wanted to die. She was homeless, living on the streets. And, you know, she'd attempted to stop drinking but couldn't. So she decided she had no option but to attempt to kill herself. So she attempted to kill herself. She walked in front of a coach who was traveling at 40 miles an hour. But luckily, the coach swerved and she survived.
Is a coach, for us Canadians over here, what do you mean a coach? Is that a train?
Oh, a bus.
A bus.
Okay. Sorry. Yeah, she walked in front of a bus that was traveling from Glasgow to Edinburgh. So she survived. And then that moment of surviving her suicide attempt, something seemed to shift inside her. The police arrived and took her back to her parents' house. And her parents, because they thought she was an alcoholic, they gave her a drink. But she picked up the glass of wine but couldn't drink it. She kept picking it up and putting it down. She felt that somehow she couldn't drink it. Then she looked at herself in the mirror and she didn't recognize herself. She thought, who is that person? That's not me. I'm not that person anymore. And then her doctor arrived and gave her some medication to help her deal with withdrawal symptoms. But after that, she felt like she was a completely different person. The craving for alcohol had just disappeared in a kind of miraculous way after 29 years. And all of the trauma, which she picked up through all her terrible experiences, had also dissipated. She felt this tremendous sense of healing and liberation and connection. And ever since then, she's been a completely different person. She's never had any craving for alcohol since then. Yeah, I was just going to say, on a physical level, there are also stories of people who... one example is there was a guy who had a spiritual awakening after a long period of intense stress. And he suffered from all kinds of physical symptoms, like chronic digestive problems and back pain for many years, to the point where, you know, he'd been in hospital for weeks and been under medication for many years. But when he had his spiritual awakening, the symptoms just disappeared. And he was really confused. He'd been carrying these symptoms for so long, but they just miraculously dissipated, a bit like Eve's craving for alcohol. And they never returned, you know. And that's not uncommon. I think many conditions have a strong mental element, a strong psychosomatic element. So when your identity changes and you become a different person with a different mind and a different outlook, all of those symptoms that were created by the mind just fade away. They pass away with the old ego that's died away.
I think we're seeing more and more of that becoming more mainstream. Stephen Porges' research on polyvagal theory, if I interpret right, he talks about so many of our symptoms still comes from our mental, emotional aspect. Oh, the author's missing my mind right now, but the body keeps the score is another example of a lot of our physical symptoms come from our mental health. And Chinese medicine has such a beautiful understanding of this. It's bidirectional. Your physical health impacts your mental, emotional, and your mental, emotional impacts your physical, which is why it's mind, body. You treat both because they're not separate. they look separate, but they're not separate. They interact with each other.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense.
So most people, when they come for me and here for conscious work, the realization I have is that they want to be happy. Some think, you know, if I have a child, I'll be happy. Or if I find this, if I get into this relationship, if I just get this job, or if I just have this much money, or if I just get healthy. From your work in this awakening process and consciousness, it seems like we're still looking for things externally from us to make us feel whole and full. Where are you on that spectrum then of, is this again then inner work that you're talking about, and that, is it possible? Is this what you personally have experienced and what the people that you've interviewed and the research you've done, does it allow you then not to need the external world to be a certain way to feel whole, to feel happy?
There's certainly a greater self-sufficiency, which means that people are less dependent on external circumstances. That's really one of the essential aims of all spiritual paths and traditions. It goes back to in the Bhagavad Gita, it says something like, the person who is enlightened is no longer dependent on pleasure or pain. He's the same in situations of pleasure and pain, failure and success. So it doesn't matter too much what's happening around you. It doesn't matter too much where you are, because you become attuned to a fundamental well-being, which doesn't depend on, you know, success or pleasure or other people. It's just there as a natural condition. You know, it doesn't mean that you become indifferent and detached from the world. In some ways, you become more involved in other people and in the world, because you can become more compassionate and more altruistic.
I was curious on that, because, and I'd love your take on this, a lot of the questions I get is, well, if I have this awakening, I do this work, and I become like somewhat self-sufficient, then I won't want to go out and do anything in the world. Is that the case, or is it the opposite of that, actually?
Well, yeah, I've heard that a lot too. It's true in a sense. I mean, one of the shifts that people describe frequently is that they don't need to do as much. They don't depend on activity for their identity. They become more able to do nothing. You know, they shift from a mode of doing into a mode of being. So they're quite happy to be alone or to do nothing in particular. So in that sense, it's true. They're not, maybe not quite as active, because they don't need to be. They don't need activity to keep them going and to give them an identity.
They're not crawling into bed and spending days in bed, or they're like not moving to the mountain for the rest of their lives. They're having more states of being. And do they do doing? Do they contribute to the world? Do they still get to enjoy the fruits of the world?
Oh, they do. I think that is one of the misconceptions about spiritual awakening, is that people do become isolated and detached and stop caring. Because in reality, people care more, you know, because they're no longer separate, because they're more connected to others and to the whole, to the natural world. They feel more empathic, more compassionate towards others. And that compassion and empathy gives rise to altruism. They feel a desire to help others, to alleviate other people's suffering, to contribute to the world in some way. So one of the essential shifts in spiritual awakening is a shift from, I describe it as a shift from accumulation, which is when your main aim is to accumulate success or possessions or experiences. There's a shift from accumulation to a mode of contribution. So then your main aim is to help your community, to help your friends and relatives, but more generally to contribute to the world. So yeah, in that sense, you know, it's not common for spiritually awakened people to become social activists. I often suggest that the greatest social activists in world history have all been spiritually awakened people, like Gandhi, Martin Luther King, Florence Nightingale. You know, she was a very spiritually awakened person. So yeah, in that sense, it's the opposite of detachment and indifference.
And you're doing it consciously, because, as you mentioned, it's the beingness, not the doingness. And so many of us, because we have this incompleteness inside, we're constantly doing to create value, which it's endless. We can't, right? We can't satisfy that hole. But when you are feeling whole and complete, when you're connected in that beingness, that doing comes out of your beingness. So it's the...
Yeah, exactly. Really
the doingness is, what is the beingness behind it? And as you shared, when you fill yourself up, there's that altruism that you want to go out and contribute. And it seems like sometimes you have universal forces behind you. Synchronicities start to happen and line up for you. Is that been your experience?
Yeah, exactly. That's a really good way of describing it. Yeah, because action no longer comes from your personal ego. It's no longer rooted in a desire for attention or to accumulate power and possessions, or simply to keep yourself busy, to distract yourself. It comes from a deeper place. It doesn't really come from you. It comes from somewhere beyond you. So your life becomes the expression of higher forces. And you still feel a purpose, but your purpose is no longer a personal purpose. It's a purpose which is flowing through you, which is carrying you. You may not be really clear about what it is, but you're just content to allow this purpose to manifest through you.
And it seems like you're not so much attached to the form and outcome, the materialistic aspect of it. And that circles back to, then I guess there'd be very little resistance, which allows the flow and receptivity to happen, because you're doing it out of just the pure joy of it, the journey of it, not so focused on the destination. And yet, as you shared, this force, which I think people are describing as consciousness, if you got that behind you, then that's a pretty good team to have on your side.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it relates to Taoism, doesn't it? The concept of the Tao. You live in harmony with the Tao, and the Tao expresses itself through you.
Right.
And therefore, yeah, you can't go wrong. You know, as long as you keep yourself aligned with it and don't allow your personal ego to take over, then your life flows very gracefully and, you know, very purposefully.
Looking at our world at the time of recording this, some describe this as, you know, we're near the end, apocalyptic times, and it looks scary out there. Others, I've heard Eckhart Tolle share often, awakening comes from suffering. So one perception is we're screwed, we're all going to die. And another perspective is we're having a collective awakening, because through suffering we can awaken. Mm. And it's kind of ironic, I guess it's paradoxical, but you kind of talk about this in your book, I think, Disconnected. When you're disconnected, this is when you're very ego-based, and we start to see what we're seeing in, like, you know, the wars that are happening around the world and the protests happening around the world. Some protests, you know, are protesting more hate and death to other people, right? Not peace. Mm. But it's that unconsciousness that leads to suffering. So being disconnected leads to suffering, and then that suffering leads to awakening, paradoxically. But can you talk a little bit about, you know, and I'm going to add one other thing from a colleague, a psychologist that we've had on as well, Vanessa Lapointe, on conscious parenting. She's a big on consciousness and attachment parenting, so awakening or conscious parenting. And the way she described it is, so many of our problems that we see in the world is because our children weren't attached to, they didn't have that conscious parenting. And so they need to do drugs, like they become addicted, they got to join gangs, they got to do cutting, suicide to numb the pain. And she shares that in one generation, if the parents attached to their children, then they would heal and they would feel connected and they wouldn't have a desire to compete or go to war and kill, because they felt connected.
Brilliant.
And that reminded me of, I haven't read your book Disconnected yet, but I've listened to videos and some papers you've written on it. And it seems like that's aligned to your thinking as well, but I thought you could elaborate on that.
Yeah, it's very close. Yeah, that sounds brilliant. The views that you're describing sound fantastic. But yeah, that's the, you know, in my book, Disconnected, I look into the causes of disconnection, and it is rooted in childhood experiences. I look into the most disconnected people who I call hyper-disconnected people. And they're the people who are psychopaths or severe narcissists. Unfortunately, they often become politicians.
Isn't that crazy? They're the ones we vote into power. Yeah, go on.
Yeah.
So that proves the point that we want to suffer so we can awaken unconsciously, inherently, because why else would we do this?
Possibly. But those people, you know, if you look at the most psychopathic politicians, the most brutal dictators, and also the most brutal criminals, serial killers and other violent criminals, they always have really disturbed childhoods. A lot of trauma in their childhoods, a lack of attachment to parents. And it's clear that they've become so disconnected in response to those childhood experiences. And also, I talk about social disconnection. There are lots of societies in the world that could be described as disconnected. Societies that are very hierarchical, very patriarchal, you know, brutal punishments and a lack of empathy. And those societies also have very harsh child-rearing practices. You know, children are meant to be obedient. Parents have a lot of authority and they physically punish their children. And so there's a connection to that. You know, when children are brought up in that environment, they do develop a lack of empathy and a sense of selfishness and competitiveness. So I completely agree that if children were brought up in completely harmonious conditions with a strong attachment to their parents, with harmony around them, then it would produce a generation of connected people who would, you know, bring a lot more harmony into the world.
Yeah, my hope and what I think is a possibility here is that we'll have more and more. We're seeing the disconnectedness right now, with the suffering, and therefore the opportunity exists for awakening on a mass level. But it still comes down to individuals doing their work. And if we reach that critical mass of awakening, we may see a shift in our world. And I was curious what you see as the next evolution of humanity if we are currently having a collective awakening. What's the possibility?
I do believe that. Yeah, I suggested that in my book, The Leap. And by the leap refers to the individual shift into awakening, but it also refers to the collective shift, the human race's collective shift into awakening. And I do believe that there are certain trends in the world that suggest that people are slowly awakening. There is a wave of spiritual awakening slowly intensifying in the world. One example is that research suggests that spiritual experiences are becoming more common over the last few decades. The second aspect relates to my research into transformation through turmoil. I think there are so many people who are undergoing this spontaneous shift into a spiritually awakened state through turmoil. It's almost as if there is a latent spiritual state in the human race collectively, which is slowly manifesting itself in individuals. So it's almost as if it's ready to emerge, and it is slowly emerging in more and more individuals. And there are some social trends as well. You know, over the past 300 or 400 years, there's been a trend towards increasing compassion in societies, increasing empathy. It may not seem like it, but if you compare societies now to 500 years ago, there is a lot more empathy and compassion. And yeah, and like you say, you know, as you described so well, I think we do need to wake up to survive as a species. You know, and that, you know, these crises themselves are having an awakening effect. So I compare it to an individual person who's diagnosed with cancer. It's a jolt. It's a shift. It changes their perspective on reality. So in a sense, you know, all of the crises we're facing collectively, including the potential threat of, you know, a species death, extinction as a species, that's having a similar effect. I think, you know, particularly on young people, more and more young people are waking up to the reality of our predicament and shifting their perspective as a result.
And people like you that are writing so many articles, essays, and books, and there's so many videos from you and so many others on this idea of awakening consciousness. And so we're seeing it. It's more accessible to people that you can read it. And yeah, there's some science behind it. Like, you know, you have a scientific background, so it's not just people that have, not to take away from them, but those that were just awakened and could connect to that wisdom, right? Which you don't need to go to school for, but they weren't taken seriously because they didn't have the credibility. But now the materialist world, those that have gone and did the academics and have the intellectual side of it and can speak the language of our society, which a couple hundred years ago, if somebody said God said this, then it was taken as is. Now it's, if there's a study on it, it's taken as is. And that, I don't know what the next transformation will be, but right now people like you that have, you know, a PhD and teach in universities are bringing this information to a greater population. So thanks for doing that as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. I mean, I think the internet is quite a welcome development in this respect, because, you know, if you had a spiritual awakening, maybe let's say 50 years ago, you wouldn't understand what's happened to you, you know, particularly if you didn't know anything about Eastern spiritual traditions. You'd think, what's wrong with me? You know, why do I feel so different? But now through the internet and through the general growing awareness of spirit, about spirituality, you can understand what's happened and you can make sense of it. So you bypass that stage of confusion.
I want to ask you a little bit about psychedelics, because it's becoming much more popular again now. And I got my own personal experience, so I'll tell you my bias. I didn't have a good experience. Maybe you'll talk about the dark night of the soul, because I think that's what they describe what I got to experience. But I do think for many, it's going to have great healing. I've seen for people that have had serious addictions who have done two or three psychedelic journeys, and they're not addicts anymore. It's transformed their lives. I also have had people come to my practice, and I've had that experience where we thought we went to hell, right? And the experience was quite traumatic for me, but it accelerated my journey because of that turmoil, the suffering, and not understanding what happened, and made me go deeper into this work and get support to go through my transformation. But I'm curious, because of your background and what you've probably come across this a lot, what is your thoughts on psychedelic for spiritual awakening? What are the pros and cons and risk factors?
My view is that psychedelics can be really useful and transformational, you know, initially. That I think they're really effective value, you know, they have a therapeutic value, which is really important. And for general spiritual seekers, they can be really useful in giving them a glimpse of, you know, this spiritually awakened landscape. And for people who have never experienced it before, it's revelatory. It changes their perspective on reality. It gives them a new sense of humility, a new sense of meaning, new sense of positivity. That's fantastic. You know, it can cause real shift in values. But I don't think they can. I don't think that psychedelics themselves can provide a route to enlightenment. I don't think they can bring enlightenment in themselves. Maybe in conjunction with other forms of spiritual practice like meditation. But, you know, psychedelics do have risks. If you take them regularly over a long period, there's a chance that they will dissolve your psychological structures and cause psychological issues, which has happened to many people, particularly, you know, early on in the kind of psychedelic era when people weren't really aware of the dangers. So, I mean, I don't think you need psychedelics. I think once you've had that glimpse, once you know that that realm of spiritual awakening exists, I don't think you need psychedelics. I think then you can transfer to more organic types of spiritual practice, which don't have the same risks. So as I agree with Alan Watts once famously said about psychedelics, once you get the message, hang up.
Right. I like that. Well, so, and that's, you know, there's that balance of moderation. So it can accelerate, and but it's not something that you need. What I'm hearing is you don't need to continue doing it. And some of the other, you mentioned meditation. Some of the, one of my favorite modalities, and one of you ever experienced this, I love the Stan Groth, breath work. Mm-hmm. I have found that quite transformational. And through my meditative practices, I can have these, what I will call non-ordinary states. And sometimes you could activate some serious fear or shame or guilt, like, because they're in there, right? The dark night of the soul. What I love about these natural methods is, if it's really uncomfortable, you just have to open your eyes and it's over. Yeah. With psychedelics, you got to ride that ride.
You got to wait for 7 hours for it to wear off.
When I first got into spirituality, I was quite naive that it was all love and light and that, you know, you wake up and it's awesome, right? And my experience through waking up was not awesome. It was really, really uncomfortable. And then people I work with, it's really, really uncomfortable, right? The process. When they do the work, it's worth it. And they come to a place where they're so happy through all the turmoil they have. But they call it the dark night of the soul. And do you have something to share on that? Or is that also something that you've experienced or you notice other people experience, that they almost have to activate and bring up these feelings of fear, shame, guilt, anger, whatever it is, to be released, to get to another level of consciousness?
When you undergo a spiritual awakening, you could also refer to it as a spiritual opening. Mm-hmm. It's almost as if you're, I mean, when you're living in a boundaried ego, in some ways life is quite easy because you're contained within yourself. You're kind of separate from your unconscious mind. So, you know, life can feel quite easy. You don't feel as much as well. You're kind of slightly cut off from events and experiences. So, but when you undergo a spiritual opening, it's as if the boundaries of your ego become soft, you know, and everything suddenly seeps through. You have material from your unconscious mind, maybe repressed memories, repressed trauma that rises. You have a lot of information from the world around you. You become sensitive to other people's sufferings. So you've been bombarded with a lot of new material, which you were previously cut off from. So it can feel a little bit overwhelming. It can be destabilizing. And you know, you become very sensitive. So it can even be a bit disturbing because you're sensing other people's sufferings. You become more aware of the, you know, the problems in the world, the crises in the world. So you have to sort of root yourself. You have to ground yourself in order to deal with this. You know, you have to sort of, that's why in that initial phase after spiritual awakening, it's really important to be grounded and to spend a lot of time alone, to not be so active. Just so that you can allow yourself to stabilize, you can stop yourself being overwhelmed by all of this new information. And because that does involve, you know, trauma and repressed material from within your own psyche, you know, that can cause darkness, that can, you know, throw shadows over your mind. But yeah, but it's part of a process. You know, it's important to remember it's a process.
Does this include intergenerational trauma? Because many have talked that there's not just your life, but and we see this in research that it tags kind of the DNA. It seems that your couple of generations past can be brought forward into this lifetime. It's not just like, I'm not just talking karma, reincarnation. I'm actually talking that from an epigenetic perspective, it seems like trauma can be brought forward. And so you're talking of that as well, that could happen?
Yeah, it can definitely include that. Okay. I mean, again, when you're living within an enclosed ego, you're separate from all of that. You're cut off from all of that. So, you know, in some ways, life is quite simple, even though it's very gray and quite miserable and it's full of suffering. It's quite simple. But when you open up, you know, there's so much that you potentially open up to. So it can be difficult. But it's important to remember that in my experience, in my research, it always settles down eventually. It's a process that needs to play itself out. But, you know, even if it takes months, even if it takes years, eventually, you know, you begin to integrate these experiences. The process plays itself out. And eventually you come to a point of stability and harmony again.
And I will share personally that I have found reading your material, your videos, and your book, the one that I read, that it brought some comfort to understand kind of what was going on and what had gone on for me. It helped. And then obviously I'm a believer that you just can't read about this stuff. That helps, but there's experiential work that leads to the transformation. And so again, Steve, thanks for sharing that information.
You're welcome.
And are you willing to share your story? Like, how does somebody like you get into transpersonal psychology and writing the books you've written? You must have had some personal experience to give you this passion and desire to do what you're doing in the world.
I have had personal spiritual experiences, but for me, it was really something that was innate from a young age. You know, looking back, when I was 16 or 17 years old, I had spiritual experiences. I was definitely orientated towards spirituality at that age, but I even though I didn't understand what it was and I didn't understand the experiences I was having. So it seemed to be something that was maybe carried over from a previous life, that was just inside me waiting to express itself. But I was confused for a long time. I spent my teenage years in a state of depression and confusion because I just didn't understand myself. I didn't understand why I was different from people around me and why I couldn't seem to fit in with other people. It was only when I was in my early 20s, I discovered books about mysticism and spirituality. And I thought, wow, I'm not crazy after all. And I had a framework to make sense of myself. But also because I had a kind of, I'd always been sort of slightly intellectual, I guess you'd say, you know, so I realized fairly early on that I wanted to study spirituality from a kind of psychological or intellectual perspective. I wanted to understand my own experiences and understand why they occurred and wanted to find out how common they were in other people. So, yeah, I think my whole life has really been an unfolding of something that was always there.
And this, so thanks for sharing a bit about your personal story. And this awakening has a spiritual context to it. I think you've talked before how it's very possible to be both scientific and spiritual at the same time. You even had, is it panspiritism? Is that what I remember?
Panspiritism.
Can you talk a little of that as well?
Panspiritism is a philosophical approach that I've developed and written about. And it's an alternative way of looking at the world and an alternative way of explaining the world. The standard worldview in our society is what you could call materialism or physicalism. And it's, you know, it's the basic idea is that the only reality is physical and everything that appears to be mental is actually has a physical origin. So thoughts are really just, you know, the activity of brain cells. Feelings are just the activity of molecules in our brains and everything is just physical. But it doesn't really explain the world very well. Physicalism can't make sense of consciousness. It can't make sense of the influence of the mind over the body, you know, psychosomatic conditions, for example. It can't explain altruism. It can't really explain evolution. I wrote a book, Spiritual Science, in which I explained how physicalism can't explain all of these basic things. And also, physicalism certainly can't explain near-death experiences, psi experiences, near-death experiences. But what I do in panspiritism, I suggest that the basic reality of the world is not physical, it's spiritual. So the basic reality of the world is a spiritual energy or force, and the physical world emerges from this force. I sometimes call it fundamental consciousness or just spirit. If you posit the idea that the fundamental reality is spirit, then you can explain everything. You can explain consciousness, you can explain the influence of the mind over the body. You can explain spiritual experiences, altruism, and so forth. So this panspiritism, in a word, is, or in a sentence, is the idea that the fundamental reality of the world is spirit.
So, you know, it's a perception shift. And what I think when you share this is, way back when we thought the world was flat, and that the sun revolved around the earth, it made sense, because if you looked, it looks flat, and you can live your whole life on your wagons walking, and the world view of it being flat works. It works for most things. And when you look up in the sky, yep, it's obvious that the sun is going around the earth. You can see it, right? And then we have a shift in perception, and now we can see and get how the earth is going around the sun, and it is round. And it gives us a better view and how to function in a universe in a different way. Yeah. It sounds like we're gone from Newtonian, you call it materialism or physicalness. And then if you take the view of consciousness or spiritualism, it gives you an opportunity. I would suggest, I'm curious if you agree with this, most people are suffering. This has been my experience, myself included. I got to this work because of some anxiety, you know, even though everything on the physical world was awesome. If you looked at it on the inside, it wasn't. And it was this shift that brought more joy into my life. And when people come to me, their stories are very different. They're different genders, different careers, cultures, financial. Some are very, you know, don't make a lot. Some are multimillionaires. And when you distill it down, there's fear, shame, guilt. There's I'm not enough programs running. And so there's not enough in the material world that can fill that up. I actually have most compassion for those that I see that are worth hundreds of millions of dollars. And people go, what? Why? How could you feel? Well, because when you make minimal money, you have hope that if I just make this much money, I'll be happy. So you still have hope that you can be happy. But the person that makes $100 million a year, they have it. And now they're like, now what, right? Because they don't have hope anymore. Yeah. They really have the awakening because they couldn't get it. They got all the toys and they're still feeling the same before they had the material stuff. And so this idea of pan-spiritualism and seeing it a different way, I believe then it will shift your perception and you'll start to do the inner work. And through that, you will experience more peace and general happiness in your life when you're doing nothing. And you'll take that into the world, as you said, and there'll be the altruism.
Yeah, definitely. Your fundamental perspective is that you're not a separate being. You're connected to everything. And if you believe that you're an individual, that you're separate from everybody, then then that view makes you more selfish. You know, you feel that you're entitled to satisfy your desires, to mistreat other people. And it doesn't really matter because you're just a separate individual being trying to get as much as you can out of the world. But if you sense that you are connected, then on the one hand, it gives you a sense of responsibility to the world. It gives you empathy and compassion towards others. And it makes you less self-centered, you know, and you realize that true joy does not come from fulfilling your own desires, but from helping and supporting other people and through contributing to the world. So life becomes infinitely richer.
And for those that want to have that infinite richer life, we're curious to some of your steps and methods to support awakening. And I kind of want to give another little a metaphor here as you prepare to answer this, because in your books, when you talk about transformation through turmoil, I wouldn't wish upon anybody to have turmoil to awaken. And you don't have to wish it. The world just seems to be designed that way. It's going to come to you anyhow at some point in time. But the metaphor I usually explain when I do the conscious work in my practice is you're in the shallow end, but you're not aware you're in the shallow end, and your knees are bent and your arms are just wailing away because you think you're drowning and you're getting exhausted because you don't know how to swim and you're just flapping your arms. Your knees are bent in the shallow end and you are getting exhausted and you are afraid. And eventually you fully surrender. You're exhausted. You can't move your arms anymore. So you finally give up. And as you give up, you sink to the shallow end floor. Your knees hit the floor and you realize your nose is above the water and you can breathe. You're okay, right? That's the transformation through turmoil. And I would like the idea of I'm in the shallow end. I start to wave my arms and I realize I'm in the shallow end and I stand up. So for those of us that would like to start to develop on practices or steps to awaken that just want to stand up with a shallow end and not have to hit that moment of being brought to your knees. What suggestions do you have so we don't have to wait to get a disease, a divorce, a death, or an infertility diagnosis, please?
Yeah, this is the basic idea of my new book, The Adventure, is that you can consciously cultivate spiritual awakening without going through turmoil. What I do in The Adventure is I identify eight basic qualities of spiritual awakening, and I suggest a number of exercises and meditations and contemplative techniques to cultivate all of those eight qualities. So I won't go through all eight qualities, but just to give an example, one is gratitude. So, you know, you can cultivate a sense of gratitude through certain techniques. And another one is presence. So I offer certain techniques to increase people's capability to be present. Another one is acceptance, which we spoke about earlier. So I have exercises to cultivate acceptance. So my idea is that if you cultivate all of these eight qualities through certain techniques and meditations, then you will inevitably move towards spiritual awakening. And because, you know, that's what spiritual awakening is. It's made up of these eight qualities.
Well, then on that note, let's direct people to your website where Steve has books, including his latest book at the time of this recording called The Adventure, where he goes through his eight steps. He has many essays and articles, even poems and videos on his website as well. And he also offers an online course that is based on the book, The Adventure, as well. So you can check out for his online courses as well and join that. And his website is stephenmtaylor.com. Steve, you know, you go by Steve, but your website, Stephen. So I wanted to emphasize to people it's Stephen, because it may be hard to find him if you do Steve Taylor. So you got to do stephenmtaylor.com. And we'll put that link in the show notes as well.
Yeah, the problem is there are so many Steve Taylors. It's a very common name. I should really change my name. It's too late now.
Too late now. So again, Steve, thanks. Thank you very much for making time today. I really appreciate it. And again, check out his website. This idea on gratitude. Again, I think about what I've kind of fell into through my years of practice and training, that notice, accept, choose again. Gratitude's a big part of it, by the way, Steve. And I love the research, how it shows your brain rewires, and then you start to see more opportunities that can even bring you more gratitude. And the acceptance seems to be what all the sages and so many of the conscious teachers teach about letting go, acceptance. And it is a practice. It's not an intellectual pursuit. I don't think you can think your way through this, which is why I really recommend checking out Stephen's website, stephenmtaylor.com, for his articles, his books, his videos, and his online course. Thank you very much, Steve. I really appreciate our time today.
It's excellent. Me too. Thank you.
If you're looking for support to grow your family, contact AccuBalance Wellness Center. At AccuBalance, they help you reach your peak fertility potential through their integrative approach, using low-level laser therapy, fertility acupuncture, and naturopathic medicine. Download the AccuBalance Fertility Diet and Dr. Brown's video for mastering manifestation and clearing subconscious blocks. Go to AccuBalance.ca, that's ACUBalance.ca.
Thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of Conscious Fertility, the show that helps you receive life on purpose. Please take a moment to subscribe to the show and join the community of women and men on their path to peak fertility and choosing to live consciously on purpose. I would love to continue this conversation with you, so please direct message me on Instagram at Lauren Brown Official. That's Instagram, Lauren Brown Official. Or you can visit my websites, laurenbrown.com and accubalance.ca. Until the next episode, stay curious, and for a few moments, bring your awareness to your heart center and breathe.